Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Be'a Daf Lamed Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur at the Mishnah that you'll find about 9 lines from the top of Daf Lamed Tes. The topic heading reads as follows. You can see on the side of the Gemara we have a nosei, Chilukim bein gacheles l'shalheves, distinctions between rules pertaining to a coal versus a flame. The Mishnah itself has 3 distinctions, and right after the Mishnah, at the opening of the Gemara, there is a Braisa that has 5 distinctions between Gacheles and Shalheves. So we continue now with the Mishnah, HaGacheles Keragle HaBailim V'Shalheves B'chol Mokim. We should point out that this Mishnah is a continuation of the theme that we have been discussing in our recent Shiurim concerning the matter of Tchum. We pointed out when we were learning Daf Lamed Zayin that this topic continues till practically the end of the Masechta. So when it comes to a coal, you can carry a coal as far as the owner of the coal can walk on Yom Tov. In other words, the tchum of the coal is based on the tchum of the owner. The shalheves is a flame. For the case here would be if someone came along with a candle and he lit his candle through the flame belonging to someone else. So the fact that someone else has his own Yom Tov boundaries, his own tchum, that does not affect the one who is lighting his candle from his friend's flame. Number 2, Gacheles Shel Hekdish Moyalin Boy, a coal belonging to the Beis HaMikdash, a sanctified coal. If one uses it for his personal benefit, he will be guilty of Mi'ila. Mi'ila is the name of the violation of one who derives personal benefit from that which is sanctified. So the use of a hektish coal results in Mi'ila. V'shalheves, a flame that's burning from a sanctified source of fuel, when you look at the flame, so we say regarding the flame, lo nehenin velo mo'alin. One is rabbinically not allowed to benefit from it, but if he does, he's not guilty of mi'ila. Once again, we see a distinction between coal versus flame. The coal is something of substance. The flame, Rashi says, less be mamosha, doesn't have substance. Number 3, hamotzi gacheles l'shus harabim chayav, one who carries a coal into a public thoroughfare from a private domain would be chayav, v'shalheves potter. As far as what exactly that's referring to, what does it mean to carry a flame and not with a coal, because otherwise, if you're carrying a flame with a coal, you would be guilty for chotzah. So what exactly this is will be featured later in the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan, a brisa featuring further distinctions, some that we've already mentioned and some new ones between coal and flame. Chamisha dvorim nemru begecheles. There are 5 points stated with regard to a coal. Number 1, Hagacheles keragle habaylim, v'shalheves b'chol makoim. that we saw in the Mishnah. Number two, also we saw in the Mishnah, Kacheles shel hekdesh moalin bo, v'shal heves lo nenin v'lo moyalin. Number three, this is new. Gacheles shel avodah zarah asura. A gacheles that was dedicated to an idol. We'll call it something, a coal that's idolatrous, would be forbidden to benefit from. V'shal heves muteres. A flame that's serving an idol, one is allowed to benefit from it. Hamotzi gachelis l'shus harabim chayev v'shalheves poter. This distinction we saw in the Mishnah as well. And number five, hamuder hano mechaviro. A person who has forsworn deriving any benefit from his friend, Osir begachaloso, so you cannot benefit from his coal, umuter b'shalhavto, but you are allowed to benefit from his flame. The Gemara asks, "My shno shalheves avodah zarah desharya, or my shno dehekdish deasira?" What is the difference between a flame that's idolatrous, where we just learned in the source that it is absolutely permitted, totally permitted to benefit from, as opposed to the flame that is sanctified, where the source taught us that lo nehenin velo moalin, but it says rabbinically you're not to derive benefit from a hegdish flame. So what's the difference between avodah zarah, where we say you're allowed to benefit from an avodah zarah flame, you're not allowed to benefit from a hegdish flame? Answer: avodah zarah deme'isa ubedili inshi mina lo gozu bo rabbanan. Idolatry, which is something that is disgusting, me'isa mo'us, it's disgusting, and people are people distance themselves from it. Bedili means to separate. People separate themselves from it. So the rabbis didn't feel that there's any need to impose any additional rabbinic prohibitions so as to keep people away from it. People, even if you allow them to benefit from the flame of an idolatrous nature, they're not going to go and benefit from any further, more substantive avodah zarah matters, because people stay away from idols. Hegdish delo mois, relative to avodah zarah, so people don't distance themselves so far from hegdish. Hegdish, first of all, is not disgusting. Velobadili inshi mine, and relative to avodah zarah, people don't stay as far away from hegdish as they do from idolatry. Therefore, gozru be rabbanan. The rabbanan felt a need to impose a rabbinic restriction on the flames that are sanctified, so as to keep people away from being guilty of more serious pleasure deriving from hegdish, from substantive hegdish matters, which are severely forbidden. The Gemara continues. We learned the following halacha before in the Mishnah. Hamotzi gacheles rishus rabim chayv v'shalhev is poter. The Gemara asks, but we have a source that seems to indicate otherwise. V'atanya, hamotzi shalhev is kol shu chayav. So we're going to now, in the next few lines and more, be preoccupied with resolving these two sources, the Mishnah and this Brisa. On the side, we have under our no say, our topic heading, Hamotzi Shalhevis Lushus Rabim, Lefi Mishnah Seinu Potter. According to our Mishnah, one would be exempt. Hagemara Mevia Mimokor Stira She Mechayev. The Gemara we just saw brought a source that it seems to contradict and says that he's chayev. In the Gemara itself, you notice some double underlining that takes place after this, and on the side, under our mivneh, the structural note, tirutzim lehana. These are answers to resolve this question. So we have to make up our minds. The Mishnah says that motzi shalheves is potter, and the Brisa says motzi shalheves kolshu is chayev. Omar Rav Sheshes. The source that says chayev on carrying out the shalheves on yontiv, on Shabbos, is kagon sheotzioi bekesam. The flame is attached to a twig. Kesam is a little piece of wood. So it has something to hold on to. The flame is attached to something. It has a source of fuel, albeit insignificant. But that the fact that you have a flame burning from a source, that creates the chiyuv. The Mishnah's case, on the other hand, will be explained later in the Gemara. It involves a case of someone standing in a private domain where there is a flame burning, and he fans the flame in a strong fashion, and that strong fanning of the flame causes the flame to jump, to leap out into the public domain, not attached to anything, just the flame itself. If you can imagine, if you're familiar with a flame thrower, a device that was used, I believe, in World War I, maybe later as well, that was used to burn armored vehicles. It cast a very strong flame out of this device that otherwise the flame itself wasn't attached to anything. So the Gemara continues. V'teipuk le mishum kesam. Why not learn out that he is in violation of hoitzah by virtue of the fact that he's carrying out the kesam? Why does the source teach that the chiyuv, the violation of hoitzah, is based on the flame? The Gemara says, "Bidales le shiura." The kesam, the twig, lacks the dimension or the size for which one would otherwise be chayef for carrying out wood. There's a minimum size for violating hoitzah when it comes to wood. Disnan, the source in Masechet Shabbos tells us, "Hamotzi eitzim." For one who carries out wood is not in violation unless he carries out kedei levashel beitza kal, enough wood to serve as fuel for cooking a beitza kala. What a beitza kala is, so one of the pshatim is, it's an egg that cooks very quickly. In fact, that would be a chicken egg. In order to cook a chicken egg, you don't need too much fuel. So that's the amount of wood that would render one guilty of the Iser Hoitzah when it comes to carrying wood out from one domain to another on Shabbos. The source that we saw two lines above, Hamotzi Shalev is called Shechayev, it was a flame burning on a piece of wood. There was a twig was serving as fuel. However, it wasn't enough to provide fuel in order to cook up a chicken egg. Since it was so little, there is no chiyuv hoitzah regarding the twig. However, since the flame is attached to something, that gives enough significance to the flame to become chayuv for hoitzah of the flame. Abaye Omar, kagon de shayfe mono mashcha. The case of hamotzi shalheves kol shuchayev is a case where you have a mono is a vessel. We'll see a little bit more about it not being exactly a vessel, but we'll call it a vessel for right now. And the vessel is smeared with oil, and the oil burns. The itli be nurab, and the oil is burning. The oil that's smeared onto a vessel is burning. And that's the kind of shalheves that one would be chayev for in the Isur Hoitzah. The Tepukle Mishomona, the Gemara asks, well, why is he not chayev for carrying out the vessel? Answer, Bechaspa. It's a very insignificant item. It's a shard. A chaspa, generally speaking, is a broken piece of pottery. And it's that which was smeared with the oil and is right now burning. He carries that out from a private domain into a public domain on Shabbos, so he's chayev for the hoitzah of the shalheves. The Gemara asks, V'tepukle mishum chaspa. Well, at least, why not say that he's chayev because he carried out the shard? Answer, b'deles le shi'ura. Just like we said before with the twig, the chaspa also has a minimum size less than which he would not be chayev. What's the minimum size? Disnan, the Mishnah teaches, Mishnah in Maseches Shabbos teaches, cheres, clay, pottery, in order to be chayev, it would have to be enough kedei litein bein patsim lechavero, divrei Rebbe Yehuda. Without getting into a vivid illustration of what this is, but it's in the event that you have a window frame, and the window frame is lined with slats, and there's a certain, let's say, lacking in the amount of slat material that you have, and you need to plug up a gap in the slats that line the window frame, people would stuff in a shard to close the gap. So the shard, in order to have significance, would have to be useful for repairing or fixing window frames. If it's less than that, if it's not useful even for that, so it would have no hoitzah significance. The flame, on the other hand, that's right now burning attached to that shard, as we explained, the shard was smeared with some oil, that is significant enough to create a chiyuv hoitzah based on the flame. So far we've explained the circumstances of carrying out a flame and how it results in chiyuv, in a violation. Now, by the way, before we go on, you might be asking, how does Abaye compare with Rav Sheshes? Rav Sheshes gave a case of carrying out the flame attached to a twig. Abaye came up with a different case. Very often when, but this isn't an absolute rule, but oftentimes when a second opinion appears, it's because he disapproved of the first opinion. Rashi has two approaches to how to explain the presence of Abaye on the heels of Rav Sheshes. So the first approach Rashi takes is that Abaye, in the case of Rav Sheshes, would not have held that there's guilt because the twig is so small, flame will go out rather quickly, and the whole thing has so little significance in Abaye's opinion. And the second approach Rashi takes is actually a contrary approach, where the case of the chaspa represents a bigger chiddush. Namely, the case that Rav Sheshes spoke about, Abaye would agree, is chayev. Rabbi is telling me a bigger chiddush, that even a flame attached to a shard, which doesn't take hold so well, apparently doesn't burn as well, even so, it is considered enough to result in violation of hoitzah. Let's turn back to the Gemara. Elaha disnan, hamotzi shalheves poter, hechi mishkachas la. Then what is the case of the carrying out of a flame over which one is considered exempt? If these very insignificant type flames are chayev, like Rav Sheshes had or Abaye had, then what's the case of exemption? Answer, kagon de adye aduye l'rishus harabim. And we described this adye aduye before, where a flame is burning in a private domain, and he fans the flame in such a way that it jumps out, maybe like a tongue of fire jumping out into the public domain, but the flame itself, as a fireball or a flame goes out into the Rishus Rabbim, my estimation here is that it's as we described before, it's a fireball that jumps out, it's not connected to anything. So even though it's a flame, but it's not connected to anything, therefore it's not chayav. It has no substance to it. We continue with more halachas concerning tchum, boundary definitions. In this Mishnah, there are three types of pits discussed. And when we speak about pits, we're speaking about the water found in pits. Bor shel yochid kerag lehayochid. A pit found in a private domain that belongs to somebody. So the water from that pit, if one draws water, cannot be carried any further in any given direction than the owner of the pit. V'shel anshei oiso ha'ir, keragle anshei oiso ir. A pit that is of a municipal nature, belongs to the people of that city. The water there can be carried 2,000 amas in all directions of the city. V'shel oile bovel, keragle hamemale. A pit that is described as shel oile bovel. Literally, it's a reference to those who would travel from outside of Israel to Eretz Yisrael when they would come on the thrice-year pilgrimage to Yerushalayim. They had water supplies on the road. And they were made, these water supplies were prepared, as we said, for the thrice-year pilgrims to serve as a source of water on their trips to Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim. So the water from those pits and the tchum is kiragle hamemale. It goes according to the one that filled up the water. The Rashi elaborates, kiragle hamemale. We're looking at Rashi under the Gemara text, about seven lines under the Gemara text. Kiragle hamemale, mitnei shuhu hefker. It's unowned. The hefker nikne b'hagbog. That which is unowned becomes acquired through your picking up. In this case, your drawing of the water. V'imbo echod v'shoalo meimov. And if someone came to you after you filled up water from the Ole Bovel pit and asked you, can I have some of that water? Eino malichon ela karaglov. The second party cannot carry it any further than you, the one who drew it, is allowed to walk. Rashi adds that which we've learned in recent Shiurim regarding Hefker items. The less lay to Rabbi Yochanan, the Mishnah does not hold from Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, the Omar Heftse Hefker Koinen Shvisa Atzmon Bimekoimon. That Hefse Hefker acquire their own location. Another point, Rashi says, has to do with language and what the difference in language reflects. The chitemo, you might ask, im kein havelei lemeimar, the Mishnah should have read, harehen karagle kol odom. That if you say that the water, being that it's hefker, is not koinish visa, it doesn't acquire its own location. It should have then said that the water is like everybody's karagle kol odom. V'amai kotoni karagle hamemale. Why does the Mishnah seem to limit it to the tchum of the one who filled it up? Kosovar yesh breiro lahachmir. The Mishnah adopts the opinion of retroactive determination when it results in a restriction. V'amrinon, and we say huvror, it becomes clear now that you drew the water today, the me esmol nami huvror de lahai gavro chazu ubir shusei kaimi. Retroactively, it's said to be this man's water, so that at the onset of Yom Tov, it was understood to be this man, the man who drew the water on Yom Tov, it's his tchum. It goes according to his personal tchum. Ube'er v'nami, the lok Rabbi Yochanan Nuri Mesukma. In Maseches Erevin, this Mishnah is presented as being unlike the Tana Rabbi Yochanan Nuri. So by using the term keragli ha-mimalei, we convey this idea. Had the term harei hein keragli kol odom been used, then we would have understood that the water doesn't take on any one, it doesn't take on the tum of that particular person who drew it, but it goes according to anyone who happens to be holding it at any given time. So if someone, according to the Lashon of Harehin Karagli Kol Adam, even if Mr. A drew the water and Mr. B comes and takes it, it would then take on the tum of Mr. B, and if Mr. B would transfer it to Mr. C, so then the water would have the tum of Mr. C. We turn now to the Gemara. Rami le Rava le Rav Nachman. Rava raises a contradiction in the presence of Rav Nachman. Tanan, bor shel yochid keragle hayochid. The pit owned by an individual, a private person, has the tchum of that private owner. Veraminhu, and we raise a contradiction from another Mishnah. Nahoroi sam moishchin umayonoi sanoivin, harei hein keragle kol adam. Flowing rivers, that's Noros and Moshkin. Mayonos are live springs, Hanovim, that water supplies that are springing forth from the ground. Those are live springs. Harehein Karagli Kol Adam, they don't have the tchum of any one person. They're not Konesh Visa. If we look in the Rashi, Harehin Karagli Kol Adam, Ein Lohem Shum Shvisa. They don't acquire a tum, Lo B'Mekomon, not where they are, where the live spring is, where the river is located, the Lo Karagli Habailim, and not like the owner of the property in which the river is flowing, the Lo Karagli Hamimale, nor the tum of the one who did the initial filling up of the water into his vessel. Ela kol adam molichon beraglov. The chomidi denied less leishvis. Anything that's in movement does not acquire a tum. V'hachi meforshin be'erevin perak mishotzio, and that's what's explained in Maseches Erevin. So the contradiction, superficially, is on the one hand, the pit in the private individual's domain does gain a tum, it becomes like the owner's tum, and the second source says it doesn't gain its own tum. Omar Rabo, Hocha v'may askinon, the Mishnah that says it's keragle hayochid v'mechunosim. Mechunosim means it's gathered water that's not in a flowing, bubbling existence, but rather it's stagnant water that's gathered in a pit. As a result, and as we saw just now in the Rashi, it does gain its own tum. It's not flowing live water. Flowing live water that's in constant movement does not acquire its own tum. It's based on whoever happens, the tum of the water is based on whomever happens to be in possession of that water at any given time. The Itmar Nami, it's stated likewise, Omar Pchia Bar Oven, Omar Shmuel, B'mechunasim. He too explains the Mishnah of Bor Sheyochid Keragli Yochid, dealing with water that's gathered and stagnant in a pit. V'shel Oile Bovel Keragli Hamemale. Now, we're starting a suki here that lasts till the end of Omid Beis, till the Mishnah at the bottom of Omid Beis, on the side of the Gemara. We have a Noseh heading, which reads, we indicate Ad Sof Omid Beis, this topic continues, Hagdorosa Shel Bor Shel Oleh Bovel. We're trying to categorize what is the legal status of the pit of water that we described as the pit of Oleh Bovel, either Hefker or Shutfim. Hefker means it's unowned, or it's in partnership, partnership of Klal Yisrael. Under the Mivneh heading, we will see a diamond feature. B'mai komifligi, Rav Nachman v'Rav Sheshes. The Gemara will be asking, what are Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshu, who appear in the Gemara, what are they arguing about? Klomar, Eich magdirin bor shel olei bovel. The result of, and the analysis of this machlokes will result in our classifying this kind of pit. At this point, we haven't explained much. We just said that there are two categories. There's one, Hefker versus Shutvim. How that manifests itself, that will be the subject of the Gemara. Itmar, Milei Venosan Lechavero. A person filled up water for his friend. Rav Nachman Omar, Keragle Mishinis Malulo. Rav Nachman says that the tchum will be based on the tchum for whom the water was filled. Rav Sheshes Omar Keragle Mamali. And Rav Sheshes says the tchum of the water is like the tchum of the one who did the action of filling up the water, not the ultimate receiver of the water. There is a Rashi that we see 5 lines from the bottom, in the middle of the line, Mile v'nosan l'chavero, ukegon shemile l'tzorah chavero, and the circumstances over which Rav Nachman of Sheshes are arguing are circumstances where he filled up the water for his friend. The miloi la'atzmoi, if he filled it up for himself, ha tnan behedya keragli hamemale. The Mishnah left no doubt about that, where if you fill up water from the bor of Olei Bovel, from a public pit on the roads, that clearly becomes like the tchum of the one who filled it up. But that is a case where he filled it up for himself. Here we have Mr. A filling water on behalf of or for Mr. B. So according to Rav Nachman, the tchum of the water is based on Mr. B. According to Rav Sheshes, the tchum is that of Mr. A. B'mai komifligi. What's the underlying point of controversy here? Mor sovar, biro dehefkerahu. Rav Sheshes says that the bor of Olei Bovel has the status of hefker, it's unowned. Umosavar biro deshutvihu. The pit is considered the pit of partners. So Rav Nachman, who ruled that it's according to the tchum for whom it was filled up, it's fairly easy to understand that everyone is a partner in it, and I filled it up. Mr. A filled it on behalf of Mr. B, who was a partner in it. So his tchum is of significance. He's one of the partners in it. Rav Sheshes, on the other hand, who says that the water's tchum is based on the fellow who filled it up, that's a function of water drawn from a hefker source on behalf of someone else. That someone else has not become the owner of it. And there's a concept known as amagbia metzia lechavero, one who picks up an unowned item. A metzia is a found item, a lost item that you found, and you picked it up on behalf of your friend. The other party does not acquire it. There's a concept that Rashi quotes from Maseches Bava Metzia that's called the words, you can see this in the Rashi 3 lines from the bottom, it's called Toifes the Balchov B'mokom Shechav L'Achirim, where the case that's featured in Bava Metzia is if a person owes money to several people. Borrower owes money to A, B, and C. And Mr. D comes along and take something, grab something from that borrower who owes money to several people on behalf of one of them. So Mr. X comes and grabs something as a means of paying off the debt on behalf of Mr. A. But as a result of grabbing the item on behalf of Mr. A, Mr. B and C don't have a source of collection anymore. So this Mr. X grabbed something for his friend, Mr. A, causing a loss to Mr. B and C, who are also creditors, and now don't have a means of collection. That is a concept known of Toifes Lebalchov Mokum Shechav Lechirim. Likewise, Rav Shesha says, when you take something from Hefker on behalf of someone else, so now other people don't have access to it. The water that you took is no longer available to the other people. So that type of behavior where you're grabbing on behalf of someone else when you're dealing with a case like Hefker, so that someone else is not Kone. Therefore, Rav Shesha says, it takes on the definition, the Tchum definition of the one who filled it up. Okay, and Rav Nachman, in contrast, doesn't classify the bor as Hefker, so he's simply of one of the partners. Klal Yisrael are considered partners in it. One partner is drawing on behalf of another partner who is an actual current owner of it. We continue in the Gemara. Esve Rova L'Rav Nachman. We're starting here a long question. You can see we have a long question marking, taking us down a number of lines down Omid Beis. Rav Nachman said that it's the tum of the water is like the one for whom it was filled up. So now we have a source here. There's a lot of information in this source. The source deals with issues of Nidorim. But for our purposes, we're interested in seeing legal classifications. Is something considered, and specifically is a pit that's on the road, is it considered jointly owned, or is it considered unowned? So now we delve into the realm of vows, where two parties are vowing not to benefit or derive benefit from their friend. Hareini olecho chirim. Chirim, for our purposes, is an expression that means a vow. So a person says, Mr. A says, I am unto you a chirim. Hamudar osir. So the one upon whom the vow was placed cannot benefit. Rashi says at the second line, at the last line, he says, the bottom line, Hamudar osir, mishehuta lolov haneder, osir lehenos mizeh shenodar haneder. Dehochi komar mamoni, olecho hegdish. What he's saying in this expression of Arena lechachirim, he's in effect saying that my possessions are unto you like something sanctified. In other words, you cannot benefit from me. That's what Hamudar, the subject of the vow, is also to benefit from the speaker. Another case. Hare atol olai cherem. Hanoder osir. If he phrases his vow in this fashion, that you are unto me cherem, cherem is like something sanctified, then hanoder osir, the speaker, cannot benefit from the subject. Number three, Hareini Olech, we're at the top line of Omid Beis, the end of the line, case three. Hareini Olecho V'ato Olai, two-way vow, that I unto you and you unto me are forbidden. Shnehem Asurim Zebozeh. Neither one can benefit from the other. Umutoren Bishel Ole Bovel. And we dashed on Mutarim. This is one of the points that must attract our attention. And we say that these two people are mutter to benefit from items that are called Shel Ole Bovel. We mentioned before an example of that we'll see also later over here in this very source, a pit in the middle of the road that was dug for the benefit of the pilgrims. These two people can benefit from that. The Asurim Bishel Osir. However, they cannot benefit from that which belongs to the city in which they dwell. The Eluhain Dvorim Shel Ole Bavel. The following are items that are classified as Ole Bavel. Har Habayis, Temple Mount, Val Shochis, the offices that are there, Vazoros, the courtyards, Ubor Shel Em Tzaderech. Now, we dashed underline the key expressions, that those expressions that have direct relevance to our discussion. The pit that's in the middle of the road that leads to Yerushalayim. The Eluhain Shel Osair, Horechoiv, the street or a plaza, Ubeis HaKnesses, the synagogue, Ubeis HaMerchatz, and the bathhouse. So that if you have two members of a city that forswore benefit from one another, they cannot go into the local synagogue or the local bathhouse. The E Amris Bira de Shutfi Hu. If you were to say that the pit of the Ole Bovel is classified as Rav Nachman would have had you believe that they are partners, Amai Muter, why should these people, these two oath taker here who made a two-way oath, why should they be allowed to benefit from the bor of the Ole Bovel? Ba'atnan, we have the following source. Hashutfin shenodru hano zemizeh, partners that forswore benefiting from one another. Asurim likones lechotzer lirchoitz bor. They cannot walk into the courtyard that they jointly own to bathe in the pit. So that we see that pits that are jointly owned are off limits to people that forswore benefiting from one another. So how can the source just above say that in a case where people forswore benefiting from one another are allowed to benefit from the Bor Shel Ole Bovel? So, this is a question on Rav Nachman. The Gemara answers, Lirchoitz Hochinami. As far as the example that we just cited about bathing in a jointly held pit, I agree, I concede that in fact is Osir. The Hocha B'mayaskinon, the case where we say that they are mutter in the bor of Emsa Derech. We saw this in the source at the top of this omit, where we mentioned that the people who forswore benefit from one another are mutter b'shalole bavel, even though it is jointly owned, says Rav Nachman, because that is not talking about a case of their bathing in the pit. We're talking about drawing water from it. Mor midide komemale, umor midide komemale. Here we introduce a concept that we have discussed in recent shiurim, the concept of breira, of retroactive determination. Therefore, when the water is drawn, it is said to be water that was originally exclusively his. So that when Mr. A drew water for Mr. B was giving water that really was his from the outset. In other words, that water is not jointly held, because once it's drawn on behalf of that party, we say the water was his, exclusively his, from the outset. So that in relying on Breira, Rav Nachman is justifying Bor Shel Oloi Bovel as being in fact Shel Shutfis, and even though it's Shutfis, and Shutfim and partners are also to benefit from things that are held jointly, but since we have Breira operating, the water that's drawn on behalf of a particular individual is not jointly held. It's considered his from the outset. The Gemara asks a long question. Now, this long question is going to take in some extensive, some rather elaborate topics. It's important for us not to lose sight of the forest for the trees. So we have a long marking and we have some dashed underlining along the way to help keep us focused. Is it true, the Gemara asks, that Rav Nachman subscribes to Breira? We're going to see in the course of this lengthy discussion that Rav Nachman does not seem to hold from that concept. And if he doesn't hold from Breira, then it's going to be necessary to give an alternative explanation of the Bor Shel Ole Bovel. So the Gemara starts. V'sova Rav Nachman Yesh Breira. Does Rav Nachman hold from that concept, from retroactive determination? V'ho Tana'an Ho'achim Hashutfin. Brothers that are partners in their father's estate. Now, what does that mean? That requires a lot of explanation. There are two halachas that are featured in this source. One halacha has to do with machzis hashekel, the half shekel tax that's collected every year in the time of the Beis Hamikdash. And it was collected in the month of Adar when the people, when the population paid their machzis hashekel, they would add a little coin called a kalbone, and we'll just call it, without explaining why the kalbone was added, it was necessary to add this small coin, we'll call it a sort of compensation payment in the case of, to prevent Hegdish from losing out in the Machzis HaShekel collections. Now, when was a kalbone paid? When was it not paid? So, in the event that one person paid for himself and for his friend, in other words, what one person donated to or paid the tax for himself and his friend, two masa shekel in the form of one whole shekel, he would be obligated to add two kalbones, one for himself and one for his friend. Same is true with two partners that are business partners that join together, and one pays on behalf of his friend, he has to pay the kalbone for himself and for his friend. What about brothers? Brothers that happen to inherit an estate from their father, if they divided the estate and then later on rejoined as partners, so they are chayev in kalbon. What is the din of a father who pays machzis shekel on his own behalf and on behalf of his son? In that case, the father does not add a second kalbone. The father and his son is considered a single entity. They're not considered partners. So too is the case of an estate that was recently inherited by brothers who did not divide the estate yet. So it's currently a type of partnership, but under those circumstances, as we just described, it's considered as if the father is still there. There's an expression you see in the literature called, it's betfusis habayis, meaning it's under the hold of the house. So So, achin hashutvin, when brothers are legally obligated to pay the kalbone one for the other, that's an example of brothers that had already divided the estate and then rejoined later as business partners. So they're regular partners. Oh, if that's the case, Pturin mi Meiser Behema. Meiser Behema is an obligation of one to tithe from every year's animal births 1/10 of them. People would have their newborn animals, meaning they're born within that year, walk through a narrow passageway. We'd count them 1, 2, 3, up till 10. And number 10 would be marked off as a Meiser Behema. Meiser Behema is a korban, is a sacrifice that the owner brings to the Beis HaMikdash. Based on the Torah, based on Gzeiros HaKosuv, based on Psukim that Rashi quotes, the Torah tells us that animals, let's say a herd or a flock of animals that are owned as in partnership, are exempt from Meiser Behema. However, a father that has a number of sons, and the sons inherit the father, and they didn't divide the estate yet. So the brothers are all together, and they happen to own their father's herds and flocks. Those are not regular partners. That's Tfusas Abayis. That situation is Chayav in Meiser Behema. Only what I like to term it, business partners are exempt. But a father and his household, or sons that just inherited their father and didn't divide up the estate yet, there is obligation of Meiser Behema. So you have a push-pull situation, as we will see in this source, as we'll continue. We mentioned Achin HaShufin, brothers that are partners, given circumstances kishechayovin bekalbon that reflects that they've already divided their estate and rejoined as business partners, then one is chayav to add a kalbon not only for himself but for his brother who is his partner for whom he is paying the masa shekel tax. Under circumstances like that, pturin mi meiser behema. Under those circumstances, they're regular business partners. They've divided the state and rejoined as partners. They're exempt from the Meiser Behema tithe. Ukshechayovin b'Meiser Behema, brothers that are together in a flock or in a herd, and they're chayvin Meiser Behema, which reflects the fact that they haven't divided the estate out yet. The estate simply fell to them, and they remain as partners as a result of inheriting an estate together. So they're obligated in tithing their animals the Meiser Behema tithe. Pturim in a kalbon. They're exempt from adding the kalbon per person that is paying the Machzis HaShekel tax. So that in a case like that, where, let's say, you have two brothers that inherited an estate, and they haven't divided out the estate yet, and they take a coin from the estate, a full shekel coin from the estate to cover themselves, the two brothers, only one kalbon will be paid, not two. The Omar Rav Onan, Lo Shanu, Rav Onan explains that as a result of, we said there was a division of the estate and then a rejoining. So that idea, lo shonu, let's try to say this again in halachic terminology, that as a result of the dividing of the state, they lose the tfusas habayis, or the tfusas habayis status. It's no longer considered the original inheritance. Under what circumstances do we say that brothers that divided up their estate and then rejoined are rejoining as new business partners with all the ramifications that we saw. This is true. Elo shecholku gedoyim keneged tloim utloim keneged gedoyim. That is where one brother, let's keep things simple, if two brothers that inherited a state, one brother took the gedoyim, which are goats, and if you look at the word gedoyim, gedi, in a phonetic form, you might notice the word kid there. Kid, and that's a young goat. And tloyim are a reference to the young sheep, to lambs. That is a case where there was a division, but based on value, where they, for one to take the goats, so one took the goats, giving the other one the sheep. In such a case, that's a formal division, and when they rejoin, they are rejoining as regular business partners. Aval cholku gedoyim keneged gedoyim v'tloyim keneged tloyim. However, if they divided, let's say there were 10 goats and there were 10 sheep, and each brother took five goats and five sheep, Omer, we then say, Zehu chelkei hamagiyoy mishor rishoyno lekach. This is, in one word, this is breira. We say that the goats that Mr. A took, the five goats that he took, were goats that were deemed to be his from the very outset, from the very point of death of their father. And the five goats that brother B took were his five that were originally destined to be his as a Yerusha. Likewise with the sheep, the five that brother A took were five that he was originally supposed to receive, and the five sheep that brother B took were the five that he was originally supposed to receive in Yerusha. So that when they rejoin, they are really preserving the Tfusas Habayis status, the original household status, and they are not considered partners, but rather they're considered brothers holding the original estate. And of course, with the ramifications we saw above, that in such a case there would be a ptur kalbon, there would be a chiyuv, maiser behemo. But that Rav Alman's approach is based on the concept of breira, that retroactively that which they received, because they divided it the way they divided the goats equally and the sheep equally, there wasn't a real breaking up of the inheritance characteristic of these brothers. That, of course, is in contrast to the first case that Rav Anon presented, where one brother took the goats and the other brother took the sheep, when in Yerusha terms, in inheritance terms, you wouldn't be able to say that one brother was originally destined to take all of the sheep. And in a state, everything is divided equally. So the sheep would be divided equally, and the goats divided equally. So how did they divide up in that fashion as described in case one under Rav Onan? That was a breaking, that was a financial type evaluation was made, and that type of division is in effect breaking up the household status, creating two separate brother entities, and when they rejoin, they are regular partners. For Rav Nachman Omer, now we start focusing in on the heart of the question, because in our sukkah we're analyzing Rav Nachman's approach. And does he hold from Breira? Just like we explained under Rav Onan, his number two halacha, in order for that to be the case, we have to say there is Breira. Rav Nachman will disagree. Rav Nachman Omer, afilu cholku gedoyim keneged gedoyim utloyim keneged tloyim. Even where they divided the sheep equally and the goats equally, Ein Omer Ze chelkei hamagiyoi misha rishoyne lekach. We do not say that this is the portion that he was originally supposed to receive as an heir. So we see Rav Nachman clearly denying Reira. And as far as Rav Nachman is concerned, in with regard to the source or Achmashut, from any division that they make and then subsequently rejoin, they will be considered regular business partners at the point that they rejoin. As far as Rav Nachman is concerned, the only time brothers would be considered heirs is prior to any division of the estate. But once they divide the estate and then rejoin, they are considered regular shutfin, regular partners, with all that that implies. Well, for our purposes, just to get to the heart of the matter, Rav Nachman does not hold from Breira. If Rav Nachman does not hold from Breira, then how is it that a pit of the Ole Bovel, Rav Nachman is claiming that it's the water is kiragle mi shinismalu loy? If it's in order for us to have said, like Rav Nachman said before, that the pit of Ole Bovel is considered a shudfin bor, in order to justify that explanation in light of the sources we saw above, he had to base his explanation on Breira. But if you don't hold from Breira, you can't describe the bor as a bor of shudfin. And if you can't explain it as a bor of shudfin, you're going to have to explain it as a bor of hefker. But if it's of a bor of hefker, so then why would Rav Nachman say that the tchum of the water would be based on the tchum of the one for whom the water was filled? So we continue in the Gemara. Ela de kulei almo biro de hefkero hi. Everyone will hold, including Rav Nachman, that the bor of the Ole Bovel is hefker. V'hocha, and here, where you see Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes arguing, b'magbia metzia l'chaveroi komifligi. They argue concerning what happens when you pick up a found item on behalf of someone else. Mor sovar kona, umor sovar lo kona. Now, for this, we have to go into the Rashi, because it involves other sukyas in Shas. Rashi quotes the sukya in Bava Metzia. And we look together in the Rashi that's found about seven lines from the bottom. At the end of the line, we have squiggle underline, Elohochi Garsinon, B'magbio Metzila Chavero Komifilgi, Vesulo. In other words, the text in the Gemara is as Rashi says it should be. Upirush b'magbia metzila chaveru komiflegi. The explanation of this point of picking up a found item on behalf of someone else is their point of argument. Udekuli alma lokono chaveru b'hagbaaso shelze. Everyone will agree that the initial picking up on behalf of the second party, everyone, that means Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes will both agree that that second party does not acquire it at the point that the water is being drawn. Elo im kono hamagbia im lo kono pligi. The machlokus here involves, does the one who drew the water acquire it or not? Now, once again, we're talking about someone drawing water on behalf of someone else. So does the one who draws the water acquire it or not? And we speak again, not to lose sight of the big sugya at hand. The big topic is the issue of tchum. When we say kona, it means it becomes yours with regard to the matter of tchum definition. So when you are drawing the water with the intention of benefiting someone else with that water, everyone agrees that someone else does not acquire it at that point. Do you acquire it? Rav Nachman Sovar lo kono hamagbia. Rav Nachman says no. The person who drew the water does not acquire it. Delav adaite lemikni. He didn't draw the water with that intention of acquiring it. Elo mishne smalu lo konam. Rather, the one for whom it was drawn will acquire it. B'mashicha. We dash. That's a key word here. B'mashicha kishiyekablim. Kishibol lirishuso v'daita liknos. So for who will become the owner of the water? As far as Rav Nachman is concerned, clearly not the one who drew the water. Rather, the one for whom it was drawn, but only at the point that that party takes it, takes physical possession of it. Dechiyom alo kona chavero, that which Rav Nachman says in Bava Metzia, that lo kona chavero kozman shu biyana magbia amrino diocholom arni ezke bo leatzmi. Here the Rashi goes into some detail that's best understood in Maseches Bava Metzia. We skip to the next line. Rav Sheshes Sovar kono hamagbia tchila, that when you picked it up, when you drew, and when you picked up the found article on behalf of your friend, in this case you drew the water on behalf of your friend, initially you do acquire it. Umiyodo kiblem ze hilkoch kiragli hamimale. And therefore Rav Sheshes says the tchum definition of the water is based on the one who did the physical drawing of the water. Rav Nachman, on the other hand, he says that it becomes like the tchum of the one for whom it was filled up, but not initially, not at the point the water was drawn, but rather at the point that that party takes possession of it. Up till that point, though, Rav Nachman tells you, it was not considered having the domain or the location or the tchum of the one who did the filling of the water. So that when you read this expression, is the one who draws the water koine or not? So Mar Sovar Kona, that would be Rav Sheshes, says that the magbia is kone. And Rav Nachman Sovar Lo Kona, that the magbia, since he didn't have intention for acquiring it, the magbia is not kone. Rather, the Mishne Magbia B'Shvilo is kone, the second party is kone, but only once he takes possession of it. The Mishnah. Mi Shehoyu Peroysov Be'ir Acheres. Someone had fruits in another community. They were being watched by someone in another community. The Orvu B'nei Oysoir Lovoi Etzlo. And people in the fruit community, in that second community where the fruits were, they had made an Eruv in order to visit the subject of the Mishnah, this man who owned the fruits. In other words, the two communities were more than 2,000 amos. They were out beyond the tchum of one another. And therefore, in order for the people from the fruit community to visit the owner of the fruits, they would have had to make an Eruv Tchumen. So they made an Eruv Tchumen in order to come to this city. Lo Yovi Lo Miperoisov. They are not to bring his fruits to him, the owner. In other words, these people from Fruit City shall not bring the fruits to the owner of the fruits, being that the fruits have the owner's tchum, and the fruits being beyond the owner's tchum cannot be brought to him. However, v'im irev, who, if the owner of the fruits himself had made an Eruv Tchumen, extending his Tchum, his boundary, in the direction of that city where his fruits were stored, Peirosov Kamo, the fruits are like the owner, and he could bring them back home. We continue at the top of Daf Mem. Mi shezimein etzlo orchim. Someone invited guests, and the guests came from outside the tchum, but they had made an eruv tchumin enabling them to visit this host. Lo yolichu biyodam monois. Here you have an early reference to what we call, in slang, we call the doggy bag. People, after they have a meal, and they have portions that they didn't consume, but would still like to eat them at a later point, so they would be presented with a little bag, put their food in it, and take it home. So, in this case, we have people that came from outside the tchum through an eruv tchumin, being hosted by this individual. The guests are not to take any leftovers, any portions back with them. Elo im kein zika lohem monoisehem me'erev yomtov. Unless the owner, the host, the owner of the food, the host, did this process called zika. It was mezake the portions to his guests from before Yom Tov. That is accomplished by having a third party stand by the owner, where the owner would hand the meal over to this third party and say, would you kindly take this food on behalf of the guests that will be coming on Yom Tov. That having been done from Erev Yom Tov, the food then becomes like that of the guests, because it belongs to them. Oh, and since they can go back home because they had made the tchum, they can take their food back with them, because it's theirs, the guests, as a result of the host doing zechiyah, being mezake it on their behalf. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.